Louder? Okay. How about that? Can you hear? I'm definitely getting it radioed back. Okay, so I know there's a lot that one could talk about during this time of year, and whether it's the themes of the 3 weeks halachically or the themes of the Gullus, I was thinking of going a little bit in a different direction and looking to the Parsha in a way that may or may not be so obvious. May not be so obvious how this comes from the Parsha, unless you're familiar with a specific Gemara that may tip you off. But it's also a topic which had particular relevance these past few months, when we weren't able to go to shul normally, we weren't able to hear Kriya Satorah. Now in my shul, we just lain for the first time last Shabbos, the first time since Parshas Kisisa. And that connects in a significant way to one of the most difficult obligations we have, one of the most difficult mitzvahs, which is not a mitzvah from the Torah itself, it's a drabanan halacha, and referring to Shnai Mikra V'Echa Targum, the obligation that we have. I know it made you happy. Okay, no? All right, so why exactly that's connected to the Parsha, you'll find out in a moment. But it's a topic that had particular relevance over these past few months, and I thought maybe we'll talk about that for a few minutes. Does that sound okay? Sound like a reasonable plan? Okay, so first and foremost, in a full disclosure, don't want to claim to be any better at this than anyone else. It's a challenge to be able to live up to this requirement every week to go over the Parsha twice with a Targum, what exactly counts as a Targum is a subject of some debate. Hopefully we'll get to that. But it is apparently an obligation, I mean, neither Rabbanan or Rabbinical Halacha, that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos and Daf Ches. There we find the Gemara stating two formulations, maybe there's a difference between them, that Chayiv Adam, that one is obligated to go over the Parsha twice with one translation, together with the Tzivor, on track with the congregation. And the Gemara also says it's a good idea. You're obligated and it's a good idea. Chayiv and la'olam, a person should always do this because kol ha-mavir shosa, kol ha, whoever goes over the Parsha, Shamir Kavecha Targum, Marichan lo yamo vushnosa. The Gemara says he's given an extra long life in reward. Some of the commentaries suggest, not 100% seriously, but we can relate, that your reward is a long life because you need a much longer life in order to do this. It's a very time-consuming mitzvah. It takes up a lot of time and attention, and it's hard. It's hard to make it cover all of this. So it needs a little bit of chizuk. It needs a little bit of support. There's some who point out also, not incredibly seriously, but it also has some resonance, that there's a sif in Shulchan Aruch that tells us all the rules of Shnai Mikra, and it's in Aruch Chaim Reish Pehe. So Reish Pehe spells out the verb needs to be weak, to weaken. It's a Rafu Yudayim in HaTorah. So the idea of this being an obligation that we're all a little bit weakened, it's hard to really live up to this requirement. It's very demanding. So it's worth spending a few minutes in mutual chizuk trying to support us about this mitzvah, but also to realize the special role that it played during this difficult time. So one of the questions, just to begin with, is why? Why did the rabbis ask us to do this? Why did they give us this obligation of Shnai Mikra V'Echa Targum? Why do we have such a thing? So there are a number of theories. One of the theories would be great if it were true, because it is a limud zchus, it is a help and a rationalization for those of us who have a hard time actually completing it. So you could look to this view as a defense. It's the opinion of the Ravan. The problem is that this view doesn't seem to be dominant lahalacha, and it's not even quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So it's hard to really rely on this view as a defense, but we'll start off with it, and we'll see how it has particular relevance for us during these past few months. The position of the Ravan is that this idea of Shnai Mikra was only instituted for somebody who's not able to go to shul on Shabbos, and therefore wouldn't be able to hear the Kriyas HaTorah together with the Tzibur. So essentially, this is the home game. This is the version to do at home. It's meant to mimic the Kriya Satori experience in shul, but instead at home. And some kind of a parallel here, the idea being Shnayim Mikra, because when you have laning take place in shul, so you have the Balkore and you have the Ola reading together, so that's two people, that's two Mikras, and they used to have a Mitargin, they used to have somebody in Turgamon, they used to have somebody who would translate it and broadcast it, so the Targum parallels him, so these three readings parallel the structure that they would have had in shul, and therefore this is a way to make up for not reading Kriyas HaTorah with the rest of the congregation. So that would be great, because that would be a defense if you're not able to finish. You say, but I went to shul, so therefore it's not really meant for me. It's only meant for those who aren't able to go to shul. But again, this is not a view that really makes it. And Rav Kook explained in the commentary that they published in his writings, he organized his writings to parallel the Gemara and Masechet Brachos and elsewhere. There he explains why he thinks this opinion is not accepted. He says, in general, when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, and this is also very relevant to us now, right now the shuls that are starting to open up again, or that have opened up again in the past few weeks, so the question is being asked, should we make up all the lanings that were missed? A lot of Kriyas HaTorah was half of Sefer Shmos and all of Sefer Vayikra and most of Sefer Bamidbar, so we weren't able to read those parshios in shul. So the question comes up, should we make up the parshios that were missed? So that issue is tied into a question of how do you perceive the obligation of Kriyas HaTorah? Because it could also come up much more commonly. It's not only a pandemic kind of question or a tornado kind of question. But what happens if an individual doesn't make it to shul for Kriyas HaTorah? So does that individual have an obligation to make up the Kriyas HaTorah that he missed? So that would seem to hinge on how you define the obligation. Is the obligation a personal obligation, what you would call a chova sayachid? You read it, you need a minyan in order to lane, but the obligation is on every individual to find a minyan and to hear Kriyas HaTorah. And if he misses it, maybe he has an obligation to find another situation and to make it up. Or should we say that no, there's no personal obligation of Kriyas HaTorah. It's a tzibur obligation. The congregation has a responsibility to read the parsha. Every individual is supposed to participate in what the congregation is doing. So ideally, the individuals will be in shul and will hear the Kriyas HaTorah. But if they miss it, there's no personal obligation to make it up. It's really the obligation of the tzibur. So that was a dispute, but most assume that it's the obligation on the tzibur. And that's based on a comment of the Ramban, Maseches Megillah, it sounds that way. And that's the majority perspective, that this was a tzibur obligation. It's not an obligation on the individual. Reb Chaim Brisker felt differently. It's a minority view that Reb Chaim Brisker was of the opinion that it's a personal obligation. And Rav Soloveitchik followed his grandfather's opinion. Rav Soloveitchik was a little boy, he used to visit his maternal grandfather, Rav Elia Prisoner, the author of the Tshuvas Halichas Eliyahu, and he would tell him, you should tell your other grandfather, tell Rav Chaim, that his opinion is against the Ramban and Megillah. That most followed the view of the Ramban, that it's a communal obligation. Rav Chaim and Rav Soloveitchik followed this idea that it's a personal obligation. So when Rav Soloveitchik used to travel to where I used to come and say Shira Tuesday to Thursday, he would travel on Monday. So he used to have to take a train. It was a long trip. So he would miss Kriyas HaTorah Monday morning. And when he got to the yeshiva in the afternoon, he would somehow magically find nine guys who hadn't heard Kriyas HaTorah that day, and he would organize a minyan in the afternoon to be able to make up the Kriya that he missed. And Schechter often describes this, that people would walk past the base medrash, they'd do a double take, they thought it was a tinus, why is he waiting in the afternoon? He's making up the Kriyas HaTorah that he missed in the morning. But most of us don't do that. We assume it's not a personal obligation, it is a communal obligation. So now we've had a situation where the communities didn't lane, where all the shuls were closed for all these months. So then that prompts the question, okay, maybe the communities should make up the missed parshios, but the individuals don't. So Rav Kook used this position to explain, he says, why the halacha is not like the Ramban. Because the whole idea is that there's meant to be two tiers. That there is a communal version and there is a personal version that we're meant to all learn the parsha together. We're meant to all learn through the entire Torah over the course of a year. At least nowadays we have a yearly cycle. Once upon a time it may have been different, but nowadays we have a yearly cycle in Kriyas HaTorah. So we're meant to do it in parallel, that we have a communal obligation, that's the Kriyas HaTorah that takes place in Shul, and we also have a personal obligation, that's to study it on our own, called Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum. So therefore, says Rav Kook, that's why he doesn't think the Ravan is correct, because it's not that one could replace the other, they're meant to both exist together, that we should have both. We should have the Kriyas HaTorah in Shul, and we should have also Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum. So if we don't follow that opinion, it's not really something that we can invoke to justify not doing Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum. But I thought it was maybe a helpful position these past few months, maybe l'chumrah, or maybe at least as some kind of assistance, that we weren't able to be in shul all these months, so we weren't able to have Kriyas HaTorah. So many recommended that on Shabbos morning we should go through the parsha anyway. We should read the parsha from the Chumash. This was a whole debate, the Shechter wrote a tshuva about this, about whether there really is anything that's accomplished for reading the Kriyas HaTorah from a Chumash Shabbos morning, when you don't have the opportunity to go to shul and hear lane that way. So Shechter is true, he discussed that he thought it wasn't really so productive. He was addressing the premise that there is a view of the Rambam and his Tshuvas, that Kriyas HaTorah could be done with the Eved, with a Pasul Sefer Torah. We rely on that view, because if you ever see in the middle of lane and if they discover that there's a mistake in the Torah and it's Pasul, so they put it away and they bring out a new Sefer Torah. But they don't start again from the beginning of the parsha. They don't have to start again from the beginning if they've read the first four aliyahs from a non-kosher Sefer Torah. Because we rely on the view of the Rambam that the Eved from a non-kosher Sefer Torah is also good. So what Shechter was addressing is that maybe one might think that, okay, a Chumash is like a Pasul Sefer Torah, so you could have a Chumash, it's no different than a Pasul Sefer Torah. So we say, Shasat Chak Ki Eved Ami, then we, you know, difficult position, we treat it like the Dievet. So therefore, maybe you might think that you can read from a Chumash, it's the same thing as reading from a Pasul Sefer Torah, and it's the same thing as a B'dievet situation, and therefore that can make up for the missed Kriyas HaTorah. But he didn't think that was correct, because we don't always say that a tough situation always has the status of B'dievet, and either way, you don't have a minion. So if you don't have a minion, that for sure is not going to make up the missed Kriyas HaTorah, so the whole plan doesn't really get off the ground. So that's what he was addressing in that letter. But he's mentioning this, that maybe you could come at it from a different angle, that many of the Rebbeim were understandably recommending doing this anyway because of the educational value and maintaining the structure of Shabbos morning and being able to hold on to the parsha in some format. And the view of the Ravan here comes in and helps, because even if we can't rely on that when we're able to lane, so we can't say, okay, I don't have to do Shnai Mikra because I heard laning in shul, so it's not enough for that. But maybe from this direction it helps, that when we're indeed not able to go to shul, so then there should be a greater emphasis on the importance of Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum, because maybe the Ravan is right about that, that maybe it has this ability to replace the Kriyas HaTorah in shul, and therefore, if we can't have laning, at least we can have a greater focus on Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum as some kind of a possible fill-in for what we are missing. Everything makes sense so far? So far, so good. So the whole idea of Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum, an obligation all the time, but I think over these past few months it played an even more central role in our week, helping to connect us to the Parsha when we didn't have the other avenues of hearing it read publicly, and together with this idea of the Ravam, that that's always what it was there for, so at least we could bring that into the picture. Now, it's interesting, so here there's another consequence that comes out with Chumrah, that you could also, if you're going to invoke the Ravam to help you to fill in the Kriyas HaTorah that we're missing in Shul, so it comes out with a Chumrah, because when this whole crisis started, so when was this? It was Adar Nisan when this whole situation started. So there were a lot of extra kriyos that we also missed. We missed the regular parsha, but we also missed Parshas Parah and Parshas Achodesh, and we missed going to shul on Pesach and on Shavuos. We missed the Yantif Kriyos HaTorahs. So there were a lot of extra kriyos. At that time, the timing was very good. Right after Parshas Zachor for most people, most people were able to go to Shul for Parshas Lech. Some people were already in quarantine then, but there were those, most of us were able to make it just up to Zachar, and that's given special importance. But right after that, that was when a lot of us were no longer able to go to Shul. So there were a lot of Kriyos that we missed that were an addition to the regular Parshas HaShavua. So the Shulchan Aruch follows the view of the Trumas Hadashim. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva like this also, that there's no obligation of Shnai Mikra for an extra Kriya. We don't have to do Shnai Mikra on the Yantif davening. We don't have to do Shnai Mikra for the Dalet Parshios. We don't have to do it for the Haftorahs. That it's only for the regular Parsha as it's read throughout the year. And they're working off the assumption, different from the Ravan, that the purpose of Kriya Satorah is, the purpose of Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum, is that we should have a personal learning program. This was long before there was a Daf Yomi. There was a personal learning program that was for the whole community, that was for the Chumash, and that was Shnai Mikra. The Chazal put this into place so that we should learn the whole Torah throughout the year. And maybe it's supposed to be a triple structure, Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum, some point to the Pasuk, Chut HaMesholosh, Loba Mehera Yinatek, that if you have a cord that's wrapped up three times, it's going to be strong. So maybe that's why we have this idea of doing it three times. Or Sandi Aruch HaShulchan thought it was parallel to the three stages, how the Torah was given at Har Sinai and at Arbus Moav. So the idea of it being three, okay, it's all there to be a intense program of learning the Parsha throughout the year. But it's only going to be necessary for the Parsha when it comes up once. If the Parsha is read again as Parshas HaChodesh or Parshas Parah or the Kriyas HaTorah on Pesach or Shavuos, so then there's no need to do that an extra time. However, if one was following the Ravan, it would come out L'chumra, that maybe then one should do Shnai Mikra on these extra Kriyas HaTorah, because if the point is to make up for what we're not able to do in shul, so if we normally would have read Parshas Parah and Parshas HaChodesh and the Kriyas HaTorah of Pesach in shul, so then we should make up for it by doing the Shnai Mikra at home in order to try to reproduce the experience. So that was another perspective that maybe also had some relevance here. It would also impact how that plays out. And that gives us two of the reasons that were suggested why we have Shnai Mikra, either like the Ravan to replace the Kriyas HaTorah, or like this view is telling us, it's a way of making sure that everyone will study the Chumash throughout the year and come to know it better and come to be fluent in the Chumash. There are some who suggest that there is an additional purpose also, that nowadays, so again, it's a very demanding mitzvah, so when we do go to shul, so many are lenient to count listening to the Kriyas HaTorah in shul. They read together along with the Baal Koreh, and that should count as one of the readings of the week. And they'll do it one time with the Targum in addition to that. But some of the Sfarim, if you sounds like from the Rambam, it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch, that really, ideally, you should be doing it before Kriyas HaTorah. Now, you should have finished Nayim Mikra V'Yachat Targum before Kriyas HaTorah. So why is that significant? Why is that important to do it before? So it could be that it's part of a learning program, that the idea is, it's like when you have a shir, so you have the Mar Makomos, and then you have the shir, so we want you to be fluent in the material, we want you to be knowledgeable about the material before you hear the shir about it. So too, maybe the idea is that we should study the parasha on our own, and then when we go to shul and we hear it read from the Sefer Torah, so it'll be a more meaningful experience. It'll be something that's familiar to us, and we'll be able to get more out of it because we did the Shnai Mikra in advance. That's one perspective. But there's some who say even more, that maybe the idea is that once upon a time, when you get an Aliyah, so it used to mean that you would get up and you'd be the one who's supposed to read from the Torah. Nowadays, we're concerned that maybe not everybody is ready to learn when they get an Aliyah in Shul, so therefore we don't want to embarrass anyone, so we have a professional, so to speak. We have one person who is given the task of laning for the whole Tzibur, and we don't ask the Ola to lane out loud. The Ola reads together with the Baal Koreh. So now in our new situations, we've gone back to the original now to minimize the amount of people who are, number of people who are going up into the Torah and difficult safety circumstances. So most of the shuls, many of the shuls, are having just one person up there the whole time who's laning and getting the aliyah. That's the way it used to be from the other direction. It used to be that If you get an aliyah, you'd go up and lane. Now it's the reverse. The one who's up there laning already is getting all the aliyahs, because back to the original. So what we all remember from before this is that it were different people coming up to get the aliyahs, somebody else who's not the one who's laning. But it used to be that you would have to be laning if you got the aliyah. So what would happen if you were sitting in shul and they called you up, surprise, we want to honor you with an aliyah, and you're not ready, you haven't gone over the parsha at all. So it's going to be very awkward. And you're going to have to say, sorry, please don't call me. So we don't want that to happen. So therefore, if we encourage you to go over the parsha a little bit, so maybe go over it a few times, you'll be a little bit more ready. You'll be able to accept the aliyah, and hopefully you'll be able to read it in public. And if that's the explanation, that's another twist on what it means when the Gemara says that Kalamashin and Parshiot and Yatzibur Marichon lo Yomo Vishnoso, the idea we mentioned before, that it's a way to get a longer life. So some suggest it's because there's a statement in the end of Maseches Brachos that there are a few things that aren't so helpful for a long life. There are a few things that are not so spiritually beneficial. And one of them is somebody who's called up to the Torah and refuses to go. So some of the commentaries suggest, why would he refuse to go? Maybe it's because he's expected to lane and he's not prepared, so he doesn't want to get called up. So this way, if he'll go over the parsha beforehand, so he'll be ready, and he's going to be able to have the bracha of having a longer life to offset this concern he's not going to want to go up if he's not prepared. So that's another perspective on why it is that they have this institution, Midrabanan, of Shnayim Mikra V'Yachatayim. But let me ask you the key question that we alluded to at the beginning. So why is that a topic specifically for this week's parsha? No, yeah?
The Gemara that you quoted says, Filo Ataris
and Dino. Oh, excellent. So we left that part out before, but that's the answer. And the Gemara has a very unusual statement, a very baffling statement. So the language of the Gemara, which we cut short originally, to give you the opportunity to, what's your name?
Avi.
Avi. Thank you, Avi, for filling it in. And it's that the Gemara says that Chayiv Adam Lashem Parsha Shnayim Mikra V'Yachat Targum. You have to do Shnayim Mikra V'Afilu Ataros V'Divon. Even the pasuk of Ataros V'Divon, you got to do Shnayim Mikra. So that's a very mysterious statement. Why is the Gemara picking this seemingly random pasuk and telling us, by the way, that one too? Right, so where is that pasuk from? It's not a familiar pasuk at all. Not a pasuk that most people would recognize offhand, but the answer is, where is it from? It's from this week's parsha, from Parshas Matos, and it's one of the cities, there are two of the cities, Ataros V'Divon, are two of the cities that are discussed with the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven when they're talking about those whole areas over there. So, why is that singled out? Now, why, out of all the possible psukim, you should be reminded that this one is also an obligation on Tikkur? Yeah, hi?
There's no Tarkonflip on there.
Okay, so what's your name?
Eitan.
So Eitan says, because there's no Targum Unklus. So you might think, apparently, that if there's no Targum, you don't have to do Echa Targum. Just read it twice. So this is held up because there's no Targum Unklus. Are you sure there's no Targum Unklus? Yeah, you're 100% sure? Yeah, is everyone else sure there's no Targum Unklus? All right, so I don't blame you for being sure, because we're raised L'Emunas Chachamim and we should believe Rashi. And that's what Rashi says over there. Rashi says there's no Targum Unklus, that's why it's held up. But we also encourage you to look things up inside. So if you'll open up a Chumash and you look on that pasuk, you will find that there is a Targum Unklus that is different. So that is a little difficult. It's also a little bit depressing, because it suggests to us that the unklus that we have is not exactly the classical ancient unklus, which is really depressing, because the Gemara tells us in the beginning of Megillah that unklus has Sinai, unklus has a very special significance to it. So there's a little bit of a disconnect here, because here's Rashi is saying that there's no unklus, and in our Chumashim, whatever is printed there for unklus, there actually is a translation for these words, machlalto malbeshta. The pasuk, every word in the pasuk has a different word that's not the same. So then it's very hard to understand why exactly is that the example. So Tostus raises this question. Tostus, on the other side of the page, Tostus says that, first of all, we do have Targumim for this. That's exactly what he said. We do have Targumim that translate it differently. And if Rashi's point is, and if the Gemara's point is, that this is just names. Right? So names, okay, names don't translate. Names of cities, they don't really need to be translated. New York is New York, and Moscow is Moscow, and London is London. It doesn't matter what language we're speaking. So, fine. But is this the best example to use if you're trying to find the Pasuk in the Chumash that is just names? So is this the first one that people would think of? Think of any other candidates? Yeah? Okay, are any of those your name? What's your name? Okay, so that Pasuk, which is the very beginning of Shmos. So there, the Torah starts off beginning of Shmos, Eilish Shmos B'nai Yisrael Abay Mitzrayimah, Ruvein, Shimon, Levi, etc. So there you have a few psukim in a row that are just names. And that would have been a good parsha also to talk about Shayin Yikra, not just because of that, but right before that it says Eilish Mos, the Levush, in his code, the Levush says that's a remez to our topic here, because Ve'elish Mos is Rosh Tevos V'chayiv Adam Likros HaParsha Shnayim Mikra V'yachet Targum. So if we were here at Parsha Shmos instead of Matas Masa, we could also say it's a good topic to talk about because of that remez in Ve'elish Mos, and also because why don't we look to that pasuk and say here's a good example of psukim where it doesn't add anything to translate it into a different language. So Tosfos says, well, maybe that's the whole point, that maybe what the Gemara is saying is that you have some things which are names, and some of the Targumim are not going to translate them, but other Targumim will have something different. So maybe there, the Gemara is saying that you should go out of your way to find a Targum that does translate it. But Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, where the Targum is not going to add anything, it's just going to say the same thing all over again. So then there's no point in reading that a third time. You can read that twice. And that's enough. So that's how Tostus comes at it. He says it's a whole emphasis on something that's a little bit more unusual for that reason to make that point. And if you look at the other Rishonim over there, so they have different approaches along the same lines, but slightly different nuances, how to explain what the point of the Gemara is and why this example and why not that example. If you look in the Achronim, you look in the Taz, and you look in the commentary of Yonah Reibschitz and a few other places, so they have a whole different approach. They have a number of different angles to try to explain why it is that this is highlighted out of all the psukim in the Torah. What's special about this week's parasha? What's special about our Torah's Vedivon? And there are many very different suggestions. So, for example, some say that these are names that were the Avodah Zarah names. These were the idolatrous names before they were changed. And it's not clear that it's appropriate to invoke these names if they were changed from an idolatrous name to a Jewish name. And normally the Gemara says you only do that when it's mentioned in Chumash. So here it's in the Targum, if that's the case. So if these are the Targum is giving us the old Avodah Zarah names. So we need to be told that that's also a justification to be able to invoke them, even though they are the idolatrous names. That's one approach. But there is a fascinating and somewhat controversial explanation of the Torah Tamima. Look at the Torah Tamima on this week's parasha, so you'll find he has a perhaps surprising explanation. What does the Torah Tamima say? It seems to say, at least, it says that the significance of this pasuk is that this is the one pasuk you could leave out of the Torah and it wouldn't make a difference. So you might think there's no obligation of Shnayim Mikra, so the Chiddush is that there is. Do you feel comfortable with that? What does that mean? A pasuk you could leave out, it's not going to make a difference? We are normally taught that all the pasukim are important. What does that mean? You could leave this pasuk out, it's not going to make a difference. So as you can imagine, this was a very surprising comment. What exactly is the Torah Tamima getting at? So I saw an explanation that I have a bias towards, you'll forgive me, because this explanation was written by my grandfather. My grandfather wrote a commentary on the Torah Tamima, which now recently, a few years ago, was released on the bottom of the page. You can buy the Torah Tamima, make sure to buy this edition, the authoritative edition of Torah Tamima, has my grandfather's commentary on the bottom called Meshivas Nefesh. So he explains what the Torah Tumim is getting at. And he's supported more because he points out that this is also the way it's explained by Rabbi Elazar Moshe Hurwitz, who had a commentary in the back of the Gemara. In the back of the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, you can find the commentary of Elazar Moshe Hurwitz, who was the father-in-law of the Torah Tumim. So presumably that's where he was getting it from. And there he explains that what does it mean to say that this is a pasuk you could leave out and it wouldn't make a difference. What it means is that let's go back to Shmos, right? So let's say Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. We should have highlighted that as an example because it's just names and the Targum isn't going to add anything. So to that we could say that yes, it's true that the Targum doesn't tell us anything we don't know. So maybe you'll think, okay, leave it out. But if you leave it out, it's not going to make sense. Because if you try to read the Aramaic at the beginning of Shmos, you'll have Ve'ilan Shmas Bnei Yisrael, these are the names of the Jewish people, and then there won't be any names. It'll just be a blank. So the context is not going to work. So even though you don't really need the Targum for those Pesukim, it's not telling you anything new, but you need to say it anyway because the context forces it. Otherwise, you're just going to have an incomprehensible section. So there, you're going to say it anyway, regardless of the fact that the Targum is not telling you anything new. But, he says, there's one pasuk in the entire Chumash where it's just names, and the context wouldn't force you to read it. You could read it straight, and you wouldn't feel like you're missing anything. So you would have thought that this is the one time where I don't have to do the Targum also, and the Gemara is teaching us that no, there also you have to do it. And because, indeed, it does have relevance to the text. You're not sure how it does, so they'll pay special attention to Shabbos, whether you're here late and you're doing Shemayim Bikur, pay special attention to see if you can figure out how it's relevant, because that was this Chiddush, that this is the one time you might have thought that Targum's not telling you anything new and the context is not going to force you to read it. And the Chiddush is that, no, here also it's worth reading because this is also going to tell us something new. That's a fascinating interpretation, if I do say so myself. And it also suggests a certain plan and how to read it. So this was a whole discussion, and we're almost out of time, so I'll just discuss this for a minute. But there was a machlokas, how exactly one should go about doing Shnayim Yichud Echad Targum. Should it be pasuk by pasuk, or should it be parsha by parsha? We say parsha by parsha, we don't mean like kisisa, we mean the parshios in the Torah, the way they're broken up into smaller sections. So should you read one pasuk and then the translation, or should you read a bigger section, the parsha, and then read the whole translation for that section? So it sounds like here, what the Torah Tumim was assuming is that you're reading it parsha by parsha, you're reading the whole section at a time. So when you're going to read the whole Aramaic section, so you'll say, V'ilan Shmas, going to hear the names, and then there won't be any names, so it's not going to make any sense, so you're going to have to read it anyway in order to make the context work. But if you're going one pasuk at a time, reading a pasuk and then reading the Targum and then reading the pasuk, you wouldn't have this problem. You'd be able to just skip that pasuk because the Targum isn't necessary, and you wouldn't have this issue of the context. So that is one of the many points that are debated, the halacha, about how exactly to practice Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. And there are a number of other points also which we won't go into too much detail because of the lateness of the hour, but just mention a few of them. That's one question, how exactly it should be done, what exactly should the pace be, whether it can be done on Tisha B'Av or during Avelis when Talmud Torah is prohibited, so is this something that is considered to be normal Talmud Torah, or is this more like a tefillah as a part of a Seder Hayom? And it's also relevant to one of the questions we started off, that we discussed if a tzibur misses Kriyas HaTorah, could you make up the parsha? So it got so complicated for us now because we missed so many parshios. We missed 4 months of parshios. But usually when a shul misses one parsha, or it happens like years like this, if you travel back and forth to Eretz Yisrael when they're on a different schedule, and you could miss a parsha because of that, so many choose to make up the parsha even if they're not technically obligated to, because you want to try to get the whole Kriyas HaTorah in. So what if you miss Shnayim Mikra? So can you make up the parsha? So that was a discussion in Poskim, and the view of Rabbeinu Simcha is either a Kula or a Fumra, depending on your perspective. But his view was that you could make up the parshas that you missed all up until Simchas Torah. which is probably why they called it that. They named it after Rabbeinu Simcha, who allowed us to make up all the missing Torah, all of the parashas that were missed. So that's a kula if you feel like you want to make up the parashas. It's a chumra if you were hoping that, I missed my shot, let me start fresh next week. So it's a chumra to be told that you can actually make up these parashas that you missed. But there's a whole discussion in the literature, so how exactly should you do it? Should you do it like tefillah? But if you miss mincha, so you're supposed to say two shmon esrays for ma'ariv, but the Gemara says it has to be ma'ariv first and then the makeup one that you missed from before. So is that the way to make up missed partials, or should you go in order to keep everything flowing straight? So there were many halachic points that were debated about shnayim mikra v'echad targum, including the definition of the words. What exactly does it mean, targum? So the Shulchan Aruch says that there are two possibilities as to what a targum could be. So either it's something that is like unkos, meaning it's a mesora targum, it's a translation that has a history to it and it has a tradition from Sinai, or maybe it should be something that simply explains to us what's going on, and therefore maybe a commentary like Rashi would be more appropriate for shnayim mikra v'echad targum. If you look at the Gemara, when the Gemara tells us about this, you look at Rashi on the side, he doesn't say, like me. So this is something that develops later, that we come to appreciate Rashi as a classic way of helping us to understand the Chumash. But once that's the case, the Shulchan Aruch, already by his time, he says that Rashi is a way of interpreting what the Targum is, and we're not sure which it should be. So he says, if you really want to be careful here, it's appropriate to do both. So we're having a hard enough time already getting Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum in. So according to what the Shulchan Aruch recommends, it comes out to be Shnayim Mikra and two Targum. Shnayim Mikra V'Shnayim Targum. You should do two Psukim twice, and Unkelus and Rashi. So that's also a topic of my focus, which Shachter actually recommends that you can switch off different years in different Mefarshim to have additional levels of interpretation once you're already used to Rashi and you feel you know everything that he has to say. So that's another perspective. And there are a lot of issues that are disputed by halacha. But I think it's fair to say that being that this is an obligation that is midrabanan, and being that it is so challenging for us to manage, that you shouldn't look for chumras necessarily. You should look for how to get the most out of the experience, and whatever it is that will allow us to live up to this mitzvah and to allow it to contribute to our understanding and to give us a broad sweep of knowledge of the whole Chumash, and keep us prepared for the experience of Kriyas HaTorah and Shul, and complete our knowledge to the greatest degree. So that's something we should hold on to, and whether we satisfy this sheet or that sheet, I don't think is necessarily the focus, but recognizing the great value that we can get out of this if we're able to give it the attention that it requires, and especially after these past few months where we've been given an enhanced appreciation for missing landing and sure what that costs us, and this avenue that we have to personally familiarize ourselves and to educate ourselves in the text, hopefully that leaves us with a greater sense of appreciation, especially for this week. You can look at the parsha and keep that in mind, see if you can figure out exactly how the pasuk gives us a little more insight to what's going on in that story, and hopefully we'll come away from this all as richer people. So just to quickly recap, we spoke about the fact that the Gemara tells us this obligation of Shnayim Mikra. Tried to figure out why we have this din. We mentioned the Ravan who says it's only for people who don't go to shul. You can make up Kriyas HaTorah with this. That would be a good defense, except that it's not brought lahalacha. Rav Kook explains why it's not, because Kriyas HaTorah is an obligation on the seaboard. This is meant to parallel as an obligation on the Yachid. So it's not something that he thinks is a compelling perspective, and it's not brought lahalacha. But for us who wasn't able to go to shul these past few months, we can invoke it l'chumra, and we can at least have this instead of the Kriyas HaTorah that we wish we could have had in shul. And we also mentioned it brings up another possible chumra perspective, because the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Trumas Hadashin that you only have to do it for the regular parsha, not for the Dalit parshas and the Yontif Laning, which was a lot of what we missed those first few weeks. But according to this perspective, it would make sense to do Shnayim Mikra for those in order to try to replicate the shul experience. And we mentioned a few other angles. We talked about it being a personal learning program and why you would have a triple structure. A couple of suggestions along those lines. And we mentioned the poskim who emphasized trying to do it before Kriyas HaTorah, like the language of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, seem to imply. And as you mentioned, either that's because it's like the Mar Makomos for this year, so that Kriya Satara should be a more meaningful experience so you're familiar with it, or maybe so you could lane, because back in the day they used to call people up for an Aliyah and they would have to lane on the spot. So if you were prepared for this, that would give you a little bit more of a chance of being able to do that. And then we talked about the connection to this week's parasha, that the Gemara says that you should do this afilu ataris v'divon, a pasuk from this week's parasha, and we tried to figure out why that singled out. Rashi says that because there's no unkus, so there's no targum, so you might think there's no point in doing the targum phase, but the problem is in our Chumashim there is a targum, that's where Tosfos points out. And also, there are better examples, you would think, from the beginning of Shmos, where you have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, things like that, is also no targum, and that's a much more familiar example. So Tosu says that's the point, that there's no point doing the targum, but Taurus Fadiva, and there is at least some targum that translated, so that's what you should do. So the Rishonim have approaches like that. Achronim, we mentioned, have other approaches, such as the idea that maybe these are Avodah Zarah names that were replaced, maybe you wouldn't want to mention them, etc. Then we talked about the Torah Tamima, who says that it's actually a very fascinating point, that this is the one pasuk in the Chumash you could leave out, it wouldn't make a difference. That sounds like a shocking thing to say. So I mentioned my grandfather's commentary, where he explained, based on the Torah Tanimah's Fabulous commentary, the Laws of Moshe Hurwitz, that what he means is that everywhere else, even if it's just names, the context would force you to read the names anyway for it to make sense. And this is the one pasuk in all of Chumash where it's just names, and the context wouldn't force it, and therefore you might have thought it's not relevant, so the Gemara is telling you, even here, it's significant, and the context actually is helped by your reading this pasuk also, even if it seems just to be names. And we noted that this touches upon one of the many halachic points that are argued in Hilchos Shai Mikra V'Echa Targum, the question whether you should do a pasuk from the translation and a pasuk from the translation, or do entire sections at a time, like it seemed to be implying. And that invoked a few other machlokasim that we talked about, the question of making up misparshios, the Rebbeinu Simcha, who allows the Shai Mikra to be made up until Simcha's Torah, either a kula or a chumra, depending on your perspective. We talked about the question of how that should be done, and the question of what constitutes a targum. Shulchan Aruch says two different ways to understand it. One which might say it should be something like Rashi, one which might say it should be something like Unklis, and the Shulchan Aruch says that it's worthwhile to do both, making a Shnayim Mekra the Shnayim Targum. And then we concluded that these are all worthy points of discussion, but at the end of the day, this probably isn't an area to look for additional chumras because it's so challenging as it is. But we should try to make sure that we're getting as much as we can out of the experience and we follow a path that is meaningful and educational for us, and that we take this experience to help us appreciate just how much this can do to illuminate our perspectives and to enhance our understanding of the Chumash. And we should take it further as we go on to allow us to be bigger and bigger at Talmidei Chachamim for the experience. So I thank you all very much for having me. I wish you a wonderful summer here and a wonderful Shabbos, and it should be only good things.